And I think I've said this before, but this is kind of one of, I say this about a lot of portions, I guess, but this is one of my favorite stories in the Old Testament. And it really kind of bounces off what we talked about. We're gonna skip a chapter. I'm going to do it quickly. We're going to be looking at 2 Samuel chapter 9. But it really kind of bounces off the prayer of David in 2 Samuel chapter 7 in verse 18 after God told him what he was going to do for David. And then David, it says in verse 18, and David went in and sat before the Lord, and he said, "Who am I, sovereign Lord, and what is my family that you have brought me thus far, or this far?" And what we see in the story we're about to look at is kind of David's reaction to that, the grace of God when David says, "Who am I? Who am I that you would allow me to be king of Israel? That you would allow me and that you would bless my house?" And this is really kind of a high point, again, after his prayer. That's in 2 Samuel chapter 7, 2 Samuel chapter 8, if you read through it, you can go through the, it's basically David defeats the Philistines, he defeats Moab, he defeats, Hadadezer, I think is how you say it. So the whole thing is about battles and how David and God took care of him, kills 15,000 Arameans. I mean, there's a, is that what I said? Yeah, Arameans. So anyway, there's right after his prayer, David defeats all these enemies around him, and then we come in chapter 8. It's repeated twice. Look at chapter 8, verse 6. It says, "Then David put garrisons among the Arameans of Damascus, and the Arameans became servants to David, bringing tribute, and the Lord helped David wherever he went." And then look at verse 14 of the same chapter. "And he put garrisons in Edom, and in all Edom he put garrisons, and all the Edomites became servants to David, and the Lord helped David wherever he went." It's like chapter 8 is the fulfillment of the promise that God gave him in chapter 7, that he would be with him, and he would make his name great, and he would build his family. And then, I'm going to read, there's only 13 verses in chapter 9, and really, this is one of my favorite stories. You got to picture this story. You got to picture David doing this and what happens at the end of this chapter. Let me read 2 Samuel chapter 9. "And then David said," after all of this, all of his victories, all of the wars, all of the people falling and God building this his kingdom, it says, "And then David said, 'Is there anyone left in the house of Saul that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?' Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, 'Are you Ziba?' And he said, 'I am your servant.' And the king said, 'Is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?' And Ziba said to the king, 'There is still a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet.' So the king said to him, 'Well, where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'Behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar.' And the king sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodabar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, 'Mephibosheth.' And he said, 'Here is your servant.' And David said to him, 'Do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly.' And again he prostrated himself and said, 'Well, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me?'" Sounds like David. "Who who am I? Then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. And you and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him. And you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants to Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate at the king's table regularly. Now he was lame in both feet. Just think through, you know, this is, as people began to look at how David, or how God was blessing David, and he became this great king. And normally in this situation, when, he wasn't the legal heir to the throne, he was the choice of God. But in those days, and it still happens, when somebody outside of the family is going to take over as king, what would they normally do? They'd kill off everybody. They would go, find me all the relatives of Saul and Jonathan. And they'd bring them in and chop their heads off. And there's a great, I think it's called, it's not The King and I, it's with Sean Connery, and I forget the name of the lady, where the lady's in Saudi Arabia, and she's a missionary and is captured by the sheik, and Sean Connery goes after him. And, you know, there's parts of the movie where he's killing all these guys, and he finds these guys by a well, his enemies, and, Sean Connery still look like 007, but he's standing there, and he has all these guys kneeled down, and Candace Bergman, that's who is it, Candace Bergman's sitting on a horse, and he goes by, and he chops off two of the heads, the guys, and he takes the other two guys, and he gives them a sword, and he said, she's just, like, shocked, and he goes, they'll be loyal to me forever, that's kind of what would have happened here, when David took over, and he's killed all these people, and he's taken over the Edomites and the Philistines. And then he says, now, is there anybody? He says, is there anybody left in the house of Saul that I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake? I mean, this is for the people around him, they might have thought, what? Why would David do this? Maybe he's looking for the relatives of Saul to chop their heads off. But he says, David says, is there anyone left in the house of Saul that I may show kindness for him for Jonathan's sake? There's this, and turn back to, there's several places where it talks about this, the covenant that David made with Jonathan. Turn back to 1 Samuel chapter 20. And you probably remember these, but I'm going to read them anyway. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 14, 14 through 17. And this is where Jonathan and David are in the field. Verse 13, it says, if it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord, this is Jonathan speaking, may the Lord do so to Jonathan, and more also, if I do not make it known to you and send you away that you may go safely, and may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. Verse 14, and if I am still alive, will you not show me loving kindness, the loving kindness of the Lord, that I may not die? And you shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, may the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies. And Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he loved him as he loved his own life. So, you know, it's a great picture of a friendship of these two men in the field by themselves. And Jonathan says, David, will you make a covenant with me? I will protect you from my father. But promise me you will show loving kindness. If I die, you will show loving kindness to my family. And David and him make a vow. And then later on in 2 Samuel, or first, let's see, it's a, where is it? 2 Samuel chapter 24. This is when David makes this basically the same vow to Saul. After he protected him and David spares his life again. And then in chapter 24, verses 20, and behold, this is Saul speaking, behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. So now, swear to me by the Lord that you will not cut off my descendants after me, and that you will not destroy the name of my father's household. And David swore to Saul, and Saul went to his home. But David and his men went up to the stronghold. So David swore to Saul, that first to Jonathan, made a covenant with Jonathan, then made a covenant with Saul that says, I will not destroy your family. And it's almost, you know, when you think about this section here, it's like David looking back at the promises that God made him. And when David went to him and said, who am I? And it's like, I was reading a commentary, this was in Chuck Swindoll. The whole idea of loving kindness, this is the word hesed. It's kindness here. I don't know why they translated it loving kindness in the other verses. It's basically God's loving kindness. It's used, I think when they say it's from God, it's loving kindness. When they say it's from David, I think they just use the word kindness. I don't know why they interpreted it or translated it different. And Chuck Swindoll said, grace is always one way. And I was like, And really, when we understand this story and how the grace that David showed Mephibosheth is really one way. Now, is there a reaction to it? And what we're seeing here is David's reaction to God's promises to him. So there is I think when you come to understand the grace of God, you have to react to it. You have to, when you understand the forgiveness and how God accepts us, you have to have a response. You almost can't live the same. But the reality is, grace is one way. It is undeserved. It is God looking at us and saying, I'm taking you just like you are. Now, not what you can do for me, not what you will do for me, not what I see in your future. I'm taking you just as you are. And that's what this, kind of why I like this story. Then, so the story is about David, Jonathan, and then you know the story of Mephibosheth back in chapter 4, verse 4. It talks about when Jonathan, or Mephibosheth got paralyzed. It says, now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. And so they're in, well, I don't know, I don't think they were in Jerusalem, but Jonathan's servants, they heard that Saul and Jonathan were killed, okay? And then it says they were in Jezreel. The nurse took him and fled. Think about it. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, she fell. He fell and he became lame, and his name was Mephibosheth. Think how you would, you know, kid's 5 years old. You think he ever looked back and thought, you know, why do I deserve this? A nurse dropped me, and I'm lame for the rest of my life. Not able to, you know. And I guess at that point he might have been thinking about it, being king. A lame king. Can't go off to war. Can't do anything. Can't build an army. Who's going to follow a disabled guy? So these are the characters. And then verses 1 through 5 of chapter 9, basically David is looking for the heirs. And like I said, normally it would be to kill them. And there's some interesting things in here. It says in verse 4, it says, "So the king said to him, 'Well, where is he?' And Ziba said to the king, 'Behold, he's in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodabar.'" Lodabar means no pasture land. It's kind of like the kid is off hiding in a desolate place. No pasture. You can't feed cattle. You can't raise grain. You can't do anything. He is all but, here's this, and we're not real sure how many years, but he's old enough to move by this point. But he's off in Lodabar, a crippled, hiding, powerless kid that's called to the throne room. And that's when you look at verse 6, David, or verse 5, David sent for him, and Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul. Now, I don't know if Ziba said to him, "Mephibosheth, he's going to be kind to you." He said, you know, "Go find Mephibosheth so that I can show him the kindness of the Lord." It doesn't really say that. Because when Mephibosheth gets there, it says, and when Mephibosheth, verse 6, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David, he fell on his face and prostrated himself. David said, "Mephibosheth," and Mephibosheth, "here's your servant. Here's this crippled, fearful, powerless servant. Nothing to offer. Nothing to offer. He didn't bring cattle. He didn't bring grain. He didn't bring an offering to David. He has nothing to offer. Nothing he can do. No army to defend him. He's powerless." And this is where, when we understand the kindness of God and the grace of God, that is really one way. David looked at Mephibosheth in verse 7, and David said to him, "Do not fear." Picture this scene, David sitting on the throne. Mephibosheth, a crippled kid. I don't know if he walked in. I don't know if he had crutches. I don't know. But he's flat on his face, and David says, "Don't fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly." Laying down in front of it, thinking, "This is it. I have nothing to offer." And David said, "For your father's sake, my friend Jonathan, I'm going to restore to you everything that your grandfather had." This is undeserving. This is contrary to what the world would do. This is David looking back at the prayer in the story in chapter 7 and realizing God gave him everything. But who am I? And David looking down on Mephibosheth, and I don't know, who knows what he was thinking other than it's like God looking down at David. "Who are you, David? You are nothing, and I'm going to build your house." And David looks at Mephibosheth and says, "You crippled, lame, poor servant, I'm going to restore you. Everything that was your grandfather's, I'm going to restore the land to you. And you shall eat at my, not only that, you're going to sit at my table regularly." And it wasn't because he didn't say, "Man, you know, I feel really bad that you're crippled. It's really sad that that happened to you." But again, it's kind of like, "But I made a promise. I made a promise to your dad and to your grandfather who basically hated me. I made a promise, Mephibosheth, and everything that you had, from you can move out of Lodabar, you can move out of that desolate nothing, and I'm going to restore everything back to you that was your grandfather. Verse 8, and again he prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? I think when we really come to, and I'm going to apply this to the gospel, you don't have to be a brain surgeon to apply this to us, but he's asking David, who am I? Why would you do this for a dead dog? I am worthless. I can't fight with you. I can't provide you anything. Why would you do this? And then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, now listen, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. It's all now Mephibosheth's. And you and your sons and your servants will cultivate the land for him. Mephibosheth couldn't even, had no servants. These were his grandfathers. He couldn't till the land. He couldn't work. So David provided for that. Said, well, Ziba, now you're going to do all this. All your family and your servants and the produce, and you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table regularly. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. This was had to be a lot of land and a lot of cultivating and a lot of stuff was brought in. This is like grace upon grace. This is like a overflow. When David says, who am I? And I'm going to build a house for you. And God says, I can build me a house. Watch this. I'm going to build you a house. And something, let me get finish it. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord king commands his servant, so your servant shall do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. And all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants to Mephibosheth. The writer says, and so Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate at the king's table regularly. And then he closes with, and now he was lame in both feet. There's this picture, dinner time at the king's table. They ring a bell, and however this happened. But all, the people start coming in. King David sits at the head, however they did it. And Ammon, one of David's sons, come in, and here comes Solomon. The great Solomon comes walking in. Absalom comes walking in. And now before Absalom started having all this trouble. And Tamar, his daughter, comes walking in. And they're all sitting at the table. And then all of a sudden you hear this clunk, and here comes Mephibosheth. Nothing to offer. Not one of the real sons. And he ate at David's table regularly. This crippled, nothing to offer, broken, powerless kid. And pulls up to the table. And if you just picture in your mind the conversation, was he talking to Solomon about all his wisdom, and Solomon looking at him? If this isn't a picture of God's grace to you and me, that's why this, for Jonathan's sake, when we go to that table and sit at the table of the king, and we're there because of Jesus' sake, and we're crippled and lame and powerless and poor. We just, one of the lines in one of the songs we sang, given us hope when we had none. I mean, how, you know, and what's amazing now is right in two chapters is David and Bathsheba. So this is really kind of one of the high points, you know. I mean, to think of the kindness, the loving kindness that David showed Mephibosheth. Ought to let me think, you know, grace is really one way. I got nothing to bring. But you think maybe Ziba and Mephibosheth and all of those servants were pretty dedicated. You think Mephibosheth might have said to his neighbors, man, did I tell you what David did for me? And I think you can kind of be praying about this. When I go to Phoenix this week, I told this one lady who's going to see a median, to, I don't know what for, but I told her I was going to bring her a book. You know, and I keep thinking, you know, I need to be as smart as Ravi Zacharias, or as remember verses like, and I'm thinking, maybe all we need to say is, did I tell you about Jesus' sake? He took me lame, powerless, sinful, and now I can, he's promised me that I will eat at his table regularly. For Jesus' sake. Not your medium, not your... Let's pray together. Our Heavenly Father, as we... you have recorded this simple story, one chapter, 13 verses, to reveal not just to Mephibosheth, not just to the servants of Ziba, not just to the readers of the Old Testament, but to us, Father, that we would be able to look into the heart of a God that provided his own son, that because of his sacrifice, we are brought into a relationship with you when we are lame and crippled and powerless, that we could fall before you and say, who am I? Father, we thank you for this event, that we thank you for recording it for us. Father, as we go from this place, remind us that we sit at the table of the King because of what your Son did for us. Give us opportunities to just share the simple truth of the forgiveness that we find at the cross. It's in your Son's name I pray.